Welcome to episode 90. This episode is sponsored by W Lloyd Services. For all building and landscaping works across the southeast of England, they offer quality services at quality prices. If, like me, the thought of standing on a rusty nail is more appealing than fixing up your house yourself, it's professionals like W Lloyd Services who you need when it comes to home and office improvements or building from scratch. Call 07949 380 775 for your building and landscaping needs. My guest this week is Kian Godfrey, aka Somebody's Child, just a few weeks before the release of his self-titled debut album. And what a banger it is. We talked about recording with producer Mikko Gordon, whose previous credits include Arcade Fire and latest Tom York project The Smile, the autonomy of starting up as an artist, why he wrote yes on a visa form to the question, have you ever transported human body parts, and his songwriting and recording process, among other things. Coming soon, hot on the heels of my debut London live show with Garth Marenghi, episode out now, is Ray Bloody Purchase from Toast of London, Mr. Harry Peacock, and Star Stories co-star Kevin Bishop, who are both appearing at my next London Comedy Store show on February 1st. Ticket links for this and all other shows can be found at realfeedback.co.uk. And please follow me on Twitter at realfeedbackpod, because I need the assurance and approval of followers to get me through the day. You can pre-order the Somebody's Child album, or if it's after February 3rd, you can buy it and listen to it with your ears. Over to my chat now with Kian. This isn't an interview, this is a conversation. This is Real Feedback. Did you get a break over Christmas before the... because obviously the album's out in Feb, but...
Yeah, I went home to Dublin and spent some time with the family. My mum got COVID, unfortunately, which is not great for her, but we got over it. I cooked the dinner in the end, which is interesting.
First time?
First time cooking Christmas dinner, yeah, definitely.
Right, okay. And how did that go?
It was okay. I mean, she was on the phone with me and she was like telling me what to do and stuff. But it went okay. Like, the prep was done, so it was more so. But I wouldn't eat too much meat, and having to baste the turkey and, you know, lather it in butter and stuff was not the most appealing experience. But look.
How many were you cooking for?
Just four of us. Four of us. So it's the immediate family this year, yeah. So
manageable.
Yeah, manageable enough, yeah. Although the turkey was fairly big. I think it did us for 4 or 5 days afterwards.
I've just been in some panic on the phones, you know. It's going black in the oven. It's going black in the oven. What do I do? So you don't live in Dublin. Then you say you went back home to Dublin. Are you in England now then?
Yeah, I moved to London two and a bit months ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I spoke to Grian from Fontaines and he just moved over to Crouch End or King's Cross area, something like that. Is that just because if you're sort of pushing new music, it's more of the hub to be?
I think it's just, to be honest, like, Dublin creatively, I hate saying it, but it got a bit stale for me after COVID, because we just spent so much time locked up in a room, and I just needed a change, and we came over here and recorded our album. And as much as the album is, you know, has its roots in Dublin, I do think that, you know, it'd be silly of us not to ignore the influences that went into it, which are largely, you know, the birthplace is London and Manchester and parts of England. So it was important for us to give that the nod. And also, I think I mean, I've kind of lived in Dublin my whole, I would have gone sooner if not for COVID. So I just needed to get out and grow up a bit personally as well. You know, it's part of personal development involved. And also just kind of being in the thick of it, I suppose, as you say, really helps, and being able to, you know, go out on nights out, and not everyone's in tech sales, which is the case in Dublin. And, you know, there's creatives on every corner here, which you don't really get in Dublin as much. You have to kind of be in the scene, I guess, to find people of similar interests.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know the Fontaines lads are, a lot of them are over here, and, you know, tons of Irish artists do come over. And it's good to have that network here as well, you know, so that there's almost like a foundation of a support network or a group of people that are over, which is nice to know. But yeah, I'm so new here still that I yet to form my complete experience.
Well, there's luck everywhere. There's good and bad. But I mean, because I live here, personally, I'd rather just go out to Dublin. But I get what you're saying. I mean, because didn't you grow up in Paris? Didn't you live in Paris for?
Lived in Paris for 4 or 5 years as a kid. So that was up until I was kind of in my 20s. I didn't feel like I was. Obviously, I felt Irish and I felt like I was from Dublin, but I didn't feel like I was ever someone that would stay put. You know what I mean? And then just because of COVID and because of, you know, college and all that stuff, I found myself in, being there for far too long. And then I felt like Dublin was really my home, but also I kind of needed to get out of there so that I experienced different things and experience, even Dublin as well is a little bit behind Paris. When I lived there, it was just so, it was so diverse and different religions and different people of ethnic backgrounds and stuff in my school. And then I come back to Dublin and it's everyone's from the same kind of similar background, you know, I was going to the local school. So, it was a weird contrast, and I think that it's nice to be able to change it up and just experience things and just be in this place that is, there's just so much influence here and I love it because it's kind of like taking inspiration from artists. You don't want to just have one artist that you're listening to all the time. You want a whole bunch of it. So having that mix of cultures and stuff is pretty inspiring.
I kind of had that I went to Paris this is a long time ago, but I went to Paris on a college trip, and it was right around the time when I was fully into my kind of sort of grunge and alternative music, and The Doors, obviously Jim Morrison's buried over in Père Lachaise, and it was like a 5-day trip, and it was kind of like, and it sounds a bit cheesy, it was kind of like a proper spiritual, no, that's the wrong word because that sounds really poncy, but just the whole trip for many reasons was a real eye-opener. Like you say about coming over here and getting all these, soaking up the creative experiences, that was what that was for me. And it was a feeling I'd never had before. And it was it was really weird, but it was really inspiring. Cause I'm in a band as well. And at the time it was a different band, but I come back and just was writing loads. And I just found that about Paris, you saying that you came back and Dublin felt a bit stale for you.
Yeah.
But I was kind of the same when I first come back here. But it's great when a place does that for you.
I think change is just necessary in all types of creative life. I think just staying in the same place is never going to do too much to you. You know, you'll just go insane creatively, insane. And Paris is really, really inspiring for me still. I really want to go back there and spend some time there. I think my time is definitely not finished. I've just had to put a pause in it for 20 odd years. But I'm really looking forward to going back. And it's funny now when I go back, it's so nostalgic because it's almost like it was that long ago. Like it didn't really happen. It's almost like a dream when I go back, I'm like, I've seen this in another life. it's really nice to be able to go back and feel like, you know, the place and it's your kind of like a second home.
And how's the French language? Did that happen while you're over there, or were you just lots of pointing?
I was in a bilingual school. But when I started off, I always used to say comme ça, which is like this. So I would do these hand gestures and, you know, as a 6-year-old and then trying to explain to people how to kick a football properly or whatever. And that developed. So I was there for long enough that my French was very good. And I mean, fluent for my age, definitely. But see, the thing is, when I go back there now, my French is like a 10-year-old's French. So when people say like the words drunk and stuff, I'm still kind of like speaking in child French, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a funny one. Like it is still really good. I'm glad that I went back for a week there recently. And by the end of the week, it was pretty good. So that gave me a sense of relief because I don't have to have it wasted, you know? I definitely felt like I was like immature or something. And my French was immature.
Well, I found that in the, and this is not just specific to Paris, but the Parisians in like bars and stuff in the real touristy places, if you don't speak any French apart from bonjour, they're pretty fucking rude.
I've heard that. I've never experienced that, obviously, because they're always quite like, they're always like, you've no accent. And I'm like, but my mates don't speak any French. So I usually do the talking. So, people have said that to me before. But I haven't experienced that myself.
You're probably right because you're Irish. It's the English. I mean, you know, we are
we can be pretty shit. So, but I mean, there's a lot of rude bastards in London as well. So it's not.
There's a bit of a rivalry, isn't there, between the.
Yeah. So one thing with the band, I was trying to figure out, is somebody's child a solo artist with a band behind him, or is somebody's child a band? So is it you?
Yeah, I'm actually like trying to write this out at the moment for something else, and it is for creatively and the direction and stuff. It is me. I released the first song myself with before I had a band, and then we needed to put together a live show, so we did so. But it's been the same band since, and they are very much, I feel like, the band. You know, we are a band as a touring group. For example, so I guess it's kind of like, I guess, Kevin Parker and Tame Impala kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kind of need to say it in those terms for people to understand how it works. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely the same. It's the group in my head, but I'm kind of doing all the social media and stuff. And to be honest, like, it's so hard to get five people together in a room to do any of that stuff, like photographs, you know? So it works out way better for me, because I can just depend on myself to make sure. And also, musicians are just terrible for being on time for stuff and everything. So it's easier just to not rely on anyone else. But obviously, there's two guys especially that are really involved as well, and take a lot of the workload off. And it definitely feels like it's a family in that sense. But yeah, I guess it's just evolved from one thing to the next to the next.
And kind of go along with it and see where it leads.
Go along with it. Yeah. There's no boundaries here. We're very 21st century.
Yeah. So what about instrument-wise? Obviously, I've read that you play piano when you were younger, and I've seen in your videos you're still doing that, and obviously guitar. So if you release the first song yourself, were you playing every instrument? Are you on the drums as well?
We did, yeah. No, I wouldn't have been on the drums back then, but I played every other instrument. And then the producer played the drums on the track, so did most of that. Yeah. And then, yeah, now it's just, I'm not arse practicing, so I don't really do that. It probably doesn't stand to me very well, but that's why I have the lads, and they're way better than I'll ever be. So,
yeah.
So it's great to have them there as a support, you know, group musically.
One thing I loved was a quote from you, because apparently your sort of MO or whatever is to show a modern progressive island. And there was this brilliant quote that made me laugh out loud. We're not all smoking cigarettes, drinking Guinness around a candle in a pub, reading Joyce.
Yeah.
Amazing. I loved it. So is this something you feel, that this is still sort of the outlook from outside of Ireland, that people see people like that, the Irish like that?
I mean, I think, you know, in an artist sense, probably, yeah. I mean, the whole kind of... I feel like it's romanticized over in the UK, especially like a lot of these bands that kind of were coming out in 2019, you know, they weren't doing well in Ireland until they did well in the UK. And then Ireland suddenly go, oh, we want you back. You know, we're ours because you're doing well outside of Ireland. And I think it is, I think, yeah, I, as an Irish band, it's almost like you have a label on you, like for being an Irish band, where I think that, as I say, I don't define the sound, you know, by having borders on it or having, you know, genres. I'm not I don't start a song thinking this one's going to be, you know, neo soul in the bridge or whatever, you know, it's just whatever comes out. I don't like to put any limits on my creative space unless it's kind of for other reasons. So I would say, while it's so important that we are an Irish band and that, like, I have to have my heritage in the music, I don't think that needs to be labeled with other things that are also Irish. You know, there's a lot of Irish music that doesn't come out of Ireland, and it's important that we're not part of that, because it has this kind of sonic connotation that, you know, that people just think differently about, and it just puts a label on things that I don't think music should be perceived through those terms. And I know that context is a huge thing for any type of art, but I think the way that it's looked at nowadays is almost like we're living in the past from 50 years, you know what I mean? Which isn't the case. We're a highly progressive, you know, European country who are striving to be better. And I think that we take a lot of influences from all over the world, and it should be shown as that, as a modern but Irish progressive,
yeah,
you know, style of music, rather than we're just Irish.
I think that's important, is that you should all, obviously you should always hark back to your heritage, but at the same time, influences do come from outside of your country, wherever you're from. So it should reflect in your art, and it does. So you first released an EP in 2020, is that right? 20 something it was called. And then you had a couple more, I was going to say last year, but it's now the year before, isn't it? With this album, it's out February 3rd, self-titled album. I think I got to about the third track. I was like, okay, well, there are three bangers here in a row. Where's the filler will be coming up soon? Like, you know, there's no filler. It's, and obviously some of the songs are from the EPs, aren't they? And re-recorded, I presume.
Yeah, there's two.
So you kind of picked the best of your, what you took before, and then all this new stuff. But it sounded to me like a very confident third album of an artist who's already fully, fully established.
Yeah, it's like a second album to me as well. Like, it's just been so long now, because I think we would have done it differently had COVID not happened, you know. It just put a stall on everything. And to be honest, I'm glad it didn't, because I think we maybe needed that time to really develop. But, you know, people are always telling you in the industry, it's like, oh, you're not ready yet. You're not ready yet for the album. So, you know, that part of it's letting that stuff get in your head. Part of it's also just maybe not being confident in having it. And also, we just wrote in so many different styles that putting ourselves on this, in this like one sounding space was, well, I previously tried to establish a sound and, you know, it didn't work in my favor and stopped writing for a while. But while those songs are on the album, we didn't come out with the point of, like, we started with a fresh, a clean slate and started writing an album as in its own right, not with the other songs in mind. But it felt insincere not to allow those songs to have their own life, because, I mean, there was no budget gone into that release in 2020, and we didn't have, you know, a label at the time. I was self-managing, and threw 50 quid into artwork and stuff, and, you know, the video was like people who sent in videos from our gigs and stuff, and it just felt like those songs were so important in terms of our sonic identity at the time, and stood to us for quite a while during COVID when we needed the most. So yeah, it's great to be able to have them and now really see, like, finish them off and just move past those past that time. And it's also our debut album, so it should be a culmination of all the, you know, different iterations of us until this point. But thankfully we had Mikko Gordon come in and be able to just look at it as its own project, and that no longer was our problem. He had to deal with tying these things together and making it feel like, you know, a new album. And obviously we wanted it to sound raw, and we wanted it to sound new and exciting, and also touching on, you know, the influences that we had going into it, which is largely from the 80s and then kind of early 2000s indie as well. So trying to marry that into this new 2022 sound, almost like the cyclical nature of music, was a really fun process.
It's really interesting you say, go back to you releasing your completely yourself and chucking 50 quid artwork into artwork and getting people to send in your videos. That's, for me, that's like the modern day version of back in the day when we'd make an album, we'd get the CDs printed, we'd be burning the CDs ourselves, printing the labels ourselves and selling them at gigs. Obviously people don't have CDs anymore, so that saved a hell of a lot of work. But we just recorded, I just got back together with my band a couple of years ago, and we recorded an album for the first time in 17 years.
Oh, amazing.
And two of the one of the tracks we'd recorded in 2001 on a different album, and we re-recorded it. So, because it made me think of that when I saw that you'd done, was it Hold Me Like You Wanna, and We Could Start a War. Because for me, that song was never finished recording wise. And I always thought, I always wish there was a second vocal here, and I wish I could fix that. So did you have that point with these two songs where you could just go, right, here's what I felt it was missing from what I did 2 years ago, and now I can fix that? Or did you just re-record it as is?
No, we definitely wanted to change. I mean, We Could Start a War, and I mean, there was no drums on the first demo. It was me and Shay in a room, and we demoed it, and then it just got... We sent it to someone to mix, and then we released it as it is. So it feels like a demo now. I wouldn't do Shay the disservice of saying it was a demo then, because we it still does sound great, but it was never like the full production, you know. And it definitely felt like it needed it. Like we actually are releasing Jungle again on the record as well. So that's our third song that we're re-releasing, and we were kind of debating whether that was, you know, it's definitely enough anyways, but. That song, the way that it was produced at the time, Ross Dowling did it, and it was so big and so powerful that there was nowhere to go upwards, so we had to just change the style. Whereas with Homie Like You Wanna and We Could Start a War, we felt there is room here. There's a gap here that we can fill in terms of kind of sonic space. And also, like, it's been 2 years. We've learned a lot in terms of, you know, our musicianship and skills. So what can we do in a new light and in a new, through a new lens? You know, what are we able to do in a proper studio?
And you've got Mikko Gordon, like you say, who has worked with The Smile and Arcade Fire. And I mean, I would have been shitting myself going into that situation. But at the same time, I would have been excited that I've, because we've never had a proper producer. I think we did 4 or 5 albums. So we've got the engineer who might suggest something, but we've always been self-produced, which has its benefits. But at the same time, having an impartial and proper producer must have been amazing.
Yeah,
they could just point out stuff straight away. You go, oh, fucking hell, yeah. Didn't even think of doing that.
Yeah, they'll just say things like that. Yeah, which is interesting because, like, he's obviously so experienced, and he works with Nigel Godrich a lot, where he would kind of be engineering and recording it. So it's funny, he has somebody else helping him with that, and he just expects things to be done to a certain, like, standard so that he can completely focus on the bigger picture and zoom out a bit. So much so that sometimes we were like, oh, no, Mikko, do you mind if we just need to get this part in here? And he's like, that part doesn't matter. We're just like, what it does to us.
Yeah. I'll say, do you push back on that? Because for me, it would be like someone who's, he's worked with Tom York, so he must be right, but you've still, it's your creative project. Isn't it?
Well, nobody is, I mean, he's still human, and everyone is able to, not that he's makes mistakes, but everyone can make mistakes. So being aware of that and knowing that, you know, and there was a couple of times where, I mean, even one of the songs I had to push to be on the album, and he was like, people come to hear you being you. And I was like, yeah, but I've never gotten to release a slow song before. And this is, I write as much slow songs as I do fast ones. It's just, we don't release them. And actually what I said as well, but yeah, I just wanted it. It meant a lot to me. It's one I wrote. It was the first one I wrote on my own, because I hadn't written on my own in a while. I usually write with Shay. Actually, sorry, no, that's not the one I wrote on my own. That was actually Sell Out. But that one meant a lot to me. I and then in the end, he not apologized. He wouldn't do that now. He wouldn't be. But he was just like, I'm really glad we have this on it now. It needed that space, you know, the album to breathe at that point. And I'm really glad that happened. So there was a couple of cases. But yeah, like, he did make some comments. He was like, you know, if you were on your second or third album, like, you wouldn't care about this stuff, because he's obviously so experienced and he knows what's important and what needs to be done. And what I took so well from him is that, like, his way he mapped out the schedule and how we were going to get things done in the amount of time that we had to do it was just so professional, and like how he handled us as musicians. And he knew that, like, we were going to get bored. And so, you know, scheduling when vocals were going to be, and like when all this kind of stuff just made the whole experience way more enjoyable than just sitting in a room for 16 hours and being like, who's going next, what are we doing?
Yeah, we had that because we recorded in about 6 months ago, and we had 4 days because, you know, again, paying for it ourselves and didn't have the budget for any more. And it was just like, right, let's do all the drums. And we play along in that, but then when it's just the basis, so that me and the drummer now just sat there, we know we're going to be sat there for 3 hours, and then they were sat there for 6 hours while I did my guitars, because I just kept fucking it up because I hadn't recorded for so long. It's that it's that moment, isn't it? You could play it per your bit at a gig and you're absolutely smashing it, and then as soon as they go rolling, oh my God, every single thing you do is going to be put onto tape. And that just screws in my head. Take 7, you know. The songs on this album, it's partly the songwriting, partly the Mikko's amazing production, but there's loads of the songs I often ran to your album, and I could just see myself at Finsbury Park or something with 30,000 other people dancing to or singing along to these tunes. They're such big, there's probably about 5 or 6 that have got the big chorus. Yeah. So was the point to be sort of anthemic and hope that, you know, you can be seen in 2 years' time to be headlining the Finsbury Park type gigs? Was that just how the songs came out?
No, it definitely was how the songs came out, because we tried not to do that on the first album because we want room to grow on the second. And not that that came into the songwriting elements, but more in the production side. We didn't want it to be like overly big. So we wanted it to just be raw, I suppose. And I know the songs are big, so it's hard to take it out of that realm. But no, I think we chose the strongest songs because, well, A, they fit together, and B, they felt right. But Yeah, no, I Shay would be more like that. He'd be like, oh, I think this would sound like this in this room, so we should make, you know, X instrument and Y instrument. But I generally just go based on feeling.
I was really interested with what I said. You've got that huge sort of reverb, not huge as in, like, going against what you said, but that real reverby out there chorus, yeah, the motif of what I said. And then the song ends with just your voice right up close to the mic. It's the polar opposite, this real intimate moment right at the end of the song.
Yeah.
I just thought it was really interesting that sort of, that you're kind of in this huge epic scale, and then within 10 seconds at the end, it's just you right in someone's ear. Was that just a little thing that came out in the studio? They said, oh, why don't we?
I think just mixing dynamics is really important in songs, and, you know, having that, you know, so it's just not a sausage file, you know. And yeah, I just think it's really important to have that dynamic change. And that song starts off quiet and finishes quiet. It kind of reminds me of We Could Start a War, in a sense that it goes through various different stages, I guess, in the song. So it's a bit of a journey, and ultimately it is an intimate, well, the meaning in my head at least is an intimate one. So I think it's just what that song needed at the time, and also just the place it sits in the album probably needs to stay down, and the energy to fall back a little bit as well, so that we're not just kind of going at, you know.
So when, well, now you've obviously got the album, I don't know when it was finished, but you've heard it a lot, I assume. Has that now influenced your next stage of songwriting? Has it changed how you write at all?
We've started writing again in October. Geez, I can't believe it's January already, but yeah, October, we went to Wales and started album two. Which we have no idea how many of those songs are even going to be on it, if any. But yeah, it's definitely a different direction, I think. And that the first album, you know, it's been written over, well, no, about 3 years from the start, from the first song until now. So it's a long period of time, and you know, it just encompasses an awful lot of different songwriting and different stages of where I thought I was at the time. So to be able to put a, you know, a book like a full stop at the end of that chapter and move on to something else is quite exciting in new instruments and different sounds and different inspirations and stuff. So I think we're going to go a little bit more modern, more, have more acoustic in there, a bit more synth as well. And but yeah, I'm not really sure yet. I'm still formulating the idea in my head, but yeah, it's nice to be able to try something different and change it up, because for a while it was just like, especially the last like 6 months, you're like, oh, let's get another couple of songs here. We don't know what the last three or four are going to be, so let's just, like, you know, try and get as many as possible. And you're just trying to fit it into this little box. It's almost like, you know, you're trying to find a song that will fit and squeeze into your album. But, you know, in doing so, you just know that you're doing it wrong. It's not how the song's supposed to come out, you know. So obviously nothing came out, and that's the way it is. So it's nice to have like that stress off the shoulder now and just have it done. But I mean, we're still at the stage that, you know, we need this album to do well for us to be doing album two and album three, you know. So it's take every day as it comes at the moment.
I mean, do you find you're better when you don't intend on, you don't sit down and go, right, I'm going to write a song now? Because for me, it's just, I'll hear it in my head and then I'll have to put the melody down, and then I'll come back to it and work on it from there. But if I sat down to write a song, it's probably not going to happen, or it's not going to be very good.
Yeah, that's what happened in COVID for us, and it was like, well, let's work 9 to 5 and do it, you know, and just be there at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday in our studio in Dublin, you know, unemployed at the time because we couldn't work, and we just came out with nothing like that whole period, which is, yeah, a bit disappointing. But the 6 months that came after COVID, you know, we got tons of stuff, so in that sense it was it's really important to be able to have a life going on as well and take it as it comes, because creativity doesn't happen like that, you know. You just can't imagine Paul McCartney and John Lennon sitting down on a Tuesday, you know, and coming out with something. So it's a funny one, but I mean, it's always developing. Like your relationship with your muse is constantly kind of evolving, and you need to evolve with it. And at the moment, I'm not really sure. I'm kind of stuck between places creatively. I'm not really sure if I need to get into it yet. I want to have a large gap before getting really into it again. As I said, we had that 2 week spell in Wales and where we started writing, but. It's weird because you're kind of releasing music and writing at the same time. So it's in this strange kind of period. So you're kind of balancing this, like having to be on social media 3 hours a day, and also being in a headspace where you don't think about anything else, you know. So it's really
it's hard, modern, yeah.
Just modern releasing music, it's crazy. I have to do so much stuff, but at least we don't have to print CD stickers anymore. Yeah.
I've smudged another one. Oh, do you think further down the line, when this album puts you on the next level up or the level above that, do you think you'd still want to be in control of all your social media side of things? Because for me, if I find any sort of creative project where I've started it, I would find it very difficult to hand stuff over, even if it's not in this example music, it's the social side of things. I'd still want to be involved in everything. Do you think you can let stuff go?
It's a funny one because, like, in some ways, if I was to think of it like a business, I mean, I'd love to get rid of it because it's just not something I want to do. But at the same time, it's like an extension of myself, so it reflects on me whatever's put out there. So I kind of need to be in control of that, is because it's essentially how people perceive you. And while I'd love to say I don't care, and you know, people always like to say they don't care, but like. Say if so, Paddy helps out with the mailing list stuff, for example, and he always signs a key in at the bottom. And I'm always kind of like, that's not how I wouldn't say that. So I'm just like, now just take out my name because you want to be in control of what your own voice is saying, you know, because it's ultimately how people associate with the band.
Exactly, and why did you write Dudes? I would never say that. Yeah. So the tour's coming up in 10 days, I think you start. You've got one in the Netherlands, is that right? And then back over to the UK.
Yeah, so that's just a one-off. That's Eurosonic. It's a showcase festival. So we're going over doing that, and that's in Groningen, if that's how you pronounce it. It's in Northern Holland or Netherlands. And then coming back, and then we have a couple of like in-stores and radio dates in Ireland, and then back over to the UK for the start of the tour on the 7th of February.
And then America. So you're doing SXSW. And New York as well, is it?
New York and Boston, yeah. And we're maybe looking into a couple of others, but we're struggling with the visa at the moment. Like, they're tough work, all that stuff.
Really?
And it's so expensive as well, yeah. So
it's all the drug convictions, Keane, you know? It's all coming back to haunt you.
It's funny that. Funny story about that. I was going and doing a J1, so in Ireland we can get a 3-month working visa as a college student, and I was joking around on the application, you know, the way they give you all these crazy questions and stuff. One of them was, have you ever been involved in the transport of human bodily organs or something?
Oh god.
I was at the Snapchat at the time. I was taking a video or taking a picture and saying yes, like, for my friends. I forgot to change it until I went into the interview, and all these kind of strict
God.
In the office kind of looked at me with two heads. Somehow I got it. So I got through, and they
What a weird question.
It's a really strange form to fill out, altogether. But I guess they're just
it almost feels like they had that we need to put something else down. Body parts? Yeah, let's go with body parts. Yeah. Well, the album's out on the 3rd of February. I mean, it must be weird to know it's gonna be out in the world finally.
Yeah, it's not like mine.
A few singles out, but it will then be for whoever wants to hear it.
Yeah, it's a really weird one. I've had to be so careful with my relationship with those songs because I can't listen to the noise now. If anyone tells me that this song isn't very strong anymore, suddenly I'll be like, I don't want to release that anymore, you know, or whatever. So I've just had to completely separate myself from the album, and now it's no longer mine to judge or own or anything. You know, I kind of have to. Wait and see. It's a really strange one because I feel like my opinion of it is yet to be formed, and it's going to be based on what other people think, which is so backwards. It's not the way that I'd like to, but I think just naturally the way our brains work, it's you know, it's what's going to shape how I think about it, you know. What I mean, it's a strange thing, as much as I try not to let that happen.
Well, don't and the thing to always remember is there are people out there who don't like the Beatles, so even if someone says I don't like your song, doesn't mean there's a problem with the song. It means that they just don't like the song. That's it. That's how I keep telling myself that, because I'm the same. Sometimes I listen to what I've recorded and go, this is really good. Why have I never made it? And then I'll listen to it again a month later and go, what a piece of shit. It's horrible. You know? So, but yeah, I never let anyone else. I'm just like, well, okay, that's how you feel. That's how you feel. So don't ever forget.
I had to learn that at the start. I mean, I remember doing a gig for this, like, it was a kind of, for a few labels and stuff, and I went and talked to a few people afterwards, and each one of them said you need to write more songs like this. And it was a different song every time. And at that point, I was just like, right, I'm going to stop listening to everyone here. Because like, no one knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know? So it's really dangerous, especially as a young artist, if like somebody is showing interest in you as a label or something, they're going to take that word for gospel because they think this person has all the experience in the world. But a lot of these people don't even make music. So they shouldn't know or tell you what to do.
But also, if they came and saw you again 6 months later, I bet you they'd say a different song. You should write more songs like that. It just depends that, you know, they've had a shit day, whatever's going on in their life. Just your own opinion, Kian. That's what we want. Yeah. Well, best of luck with everything. Best of luck with the tour and the album. And I'll see you at Finsbury Park at some point in the next couple of years, I imagine.
Really appreciate it.
Okay, mate. Good to meet you.
Time runs out and your money's up. We could start a war. I'm convinced there's America hiding its divorce. And we never quite found the light. Can't stop till it's over. So pray for our sins tonight.